"How many men left in your company?" I asked an old Camp Elliott buddy in the 1st Marines. He looked at me wearily with bloodshot eyes and choked as he said,
20 is all that's left in the whole company, Sledgehammer. They nearly wiped us out. I'm the only one left out of the old bunch in my company that was with us in mortar school at Elliott."
I could only shake my head and bite my lip to keep from getting choked up.
"See you on Pavuvu," I said. "Good luck," he said, in a dull, resigned tone that sounded as though he thought I might not make it.
What once had been companies in the 1st Marines looked like platoons. Platoons looked like squads. I saw few officers. I couldn't help wondering if the same fate awaited the 5th Marines on those dreadful ridges. 20 bloody, grueling, terrible days and nights later, on 15 October, D plus 30, my regiment would be relieved. Its ranks would be just about as decimated as those we were filing past. We boarded trucks that carried us southward along the East Road, then some distance northward along the West Road. As we bumped and jolted past the airfield, we were amazed at all the work the Seabees, naval construction battalions, had accomplished on the field. Heavy construction equipment was everywhere, and we saw hundreds of service troops living in tents and going about their duties as though they were in Hawaii or Australia. Several groups of men, Army and Marine service troops, watched our dusty truck convoy go by. They wore neat caps and dungarees, were clean-shaven, and seemed relaxed. They eyed us curiously, as though we were wild animals in a circus parade. I looked at my buddies in the truck and saw why. The contrast between us and the onlookers was striking. We were armed, helmeted, unshaven, filthy, tired, and haggard. The sight of clean, comfortable non-combatants was depressing, and we tried to keep up our morale by discussing the show of U.S. material power and technology we saw. We got off the truck somewhere up the West Road, parallel to the section of the ridges on our right that was in American hands. We heard firing on the closest ridge. The troops I saw along the road as we unloaded were Army infantrymen from the 321st Infantry Regiment, veterans of Ungaur. As I exchanged a few remarks with some of these men, I felt a deep comradeship and respect for them. Reporters and historians like to write about inter-service rivalry among military men. It certainly exists, but I found that front-line combatants in all branches of the services showed a sincere mutual respect when they faced the same danger and misery. Combat soldiers and sailors might call us gyrenes, and we called them dog faces and swabbies, but we respected each other completely. After the relief of 1st Marines, a new phase of the fight for Peleliu began. No longer would the Marines suffer prohibitive casualties in fruitless frontal assaults from the south against the ridges. Rather, they would sweep up the western coast around the enemy's last-ditch defenses in search of a better route into the final pocket of resistance. Although the bitter battle for Peleliu would drag on for another 2 months, the 1st Marine Division seized all of the terrain of strategic value in the first week of bitter fighting. In a series of exhausting assaults, the division had taken the vital airfield, the commanding terrain above it, and all of the island south and east of Umarbrogel Mountain. Yet the cost had been high. 3,946 casualties. The division had lost one regiment as an effective fighting unit and had severely depleted the strength of its other two.